This morning, before I know if we have time for a sermon or not, we are going to take a bit of a time out from what we had originally planned this morning, and Linda is going to come and just share some of what happened to her not that long ago. This is a story that she told me part of last week, and I thought it was worth taking some time to let you hear testimony. Sometimes it's encouraging just to hear how God has worked in somebody else's life and some of what's happened. And this is a significant and neat story that hopefully is an encouragement to you. So I'm mostly going to let you share the story and just ask some questions of clarification. But you just got back from a trip to Cuba. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Last Saturday when I was at church, if anybody remembers, there was a booth over here that said experience. Have you had an experience? So the verse, and I wanted to say the verse, is from Mark 4, verse 36 to 41. Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him. And a great windstorm arose. And the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, Jesus was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? And he arose and rebuked the wind, and he said to the sea, Peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was great calm. But he said to them, Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him? That was the verse that was on the wall, and I thought, I have to give this story. So here it is. The circumstances of this trip to Cuba, what happened. I left on January 19th with my sister on a trip to Cuba with her son and his wife. And on our second evening, at about 10:30 p.m., my sister fell, getting out of the bathtub in our room, and broke her hip. My sister's son, who booked the trip, had requested the second floor for all of us, but for some reason, we were given the first floor instead of the second floor, and we thought there's no elevators in these buildings, so that was good. Well, that was an unforeseen blessing for us, because the ambulance would have had to climb stairs together. We were on the first floor. No transportation was available for my nephew and his wife to follow us, but I was able to escort my sister and ambulance to the mainland to a local small hospital. X-rays determined that she had a fractured hip, and we were about 1 hour away from the resort, and no one spoke English fluently. I had only the clothes on my back that I was wearing, my purse with valuables like passport, a bit of money, my Bible, daily bread that I usually carry, just basic necessity stuff. Didn't even have my pills, actually. Due to the circumstances of where we were, I could not leave my sister's side. I would not leave her side.
So why did you go on this trip?
My sister Annette and her husband Bob usually went abroad with their son David and his wife Mary. But my sister's husband has been in long-term care at the Georgian Village for about 2 years with Alzheimer's. She hadn't traveled since, and my sister's son said, you know, why don't you take another trip and get Linda to go with you? You're really close to her. So she thought, well, maybe I'll make one last trip, and I'm turning 80 next year. What better than to go with my only sister who I'm so close to, which was me? So her son David and wife insisted on paying for both of us to share that week with them in Cayacoco, Cuba, at a five-star resort. And since it meant so much to them that I go, I decided to spend some quality time with my sister and her family.
Now, I talked to you just before you left, and you said you were going to Cuba, and I thought, great, are you excited? And you were not.
No.
So what were your thoughts before you went on this trip?
Well, although the trip was paid for, I didn't have to put out any money. I didn't really want to go because I was concerned for my sister's present health, her medical history, and her receiving various cancer treatments last year. She just finished chemo, radiation, and I said to her, you know what, you can't go unless you find out you're insured, and make sure the doctor knows you're going and talk to them. And I kept giving her all these excuses. Anyway, she called me up and she said, I had a long talk with the insurance. I can go. My doctor said I can go. So what can I do? Reluctantly, I went with her.
All right. So you get there. She has this fall. You end up in this little hospital. What else? What happened in that hospital?
Well, as you know, it's a third world country and it's a communist country. I discovered their laws are very different with communication and basic necessities. My first impressions weren't very good. I had never seen a hospital so poor. It was night, very late, making our way to the emergency room area, the barely lit halls, with the stench odor that was much to be desired. I was by my sister's side for 3 nights with little sleep and no food. There were no call bells. The public bathroom around the corner had no door, only a curtain. No toilet seat on the toilet that leaked whenever it flushed. No hot water. And one tiny bar of soap to share on the floor for the nurses and patients. And they gave me a roll of toilet paper and told me to hang on to it and share it with my sister. Our highlight was a pet iguana that kept coming in and out with the hole in the roof in the room. That was our entertainment.
So, at this point, like, what is the diagnosis? What's going to happen with your sister?
Well, I was beginning to wonder, are we ever going to make it back home alive? When the doctors began to assess my sister, I advised them of her medic alert bracelet, but she has a blood disorder and she's got other issues going on her bracelet. Her prescription records, I had all brought all that with me, her health records, all her medication, everything. And they were prepping her for surgery. They gave her an IV drip, they catheterized her, and they advised us this surgery had to be performed within 72 hours, or they would not allow her to travel due to complications that could arise from the period of time. So during her stay in Cuba, she was never in a lot of pain, and they tried to keep her very comfortable. They were good to her. And I kept telling myself, this is the nurses and doctors are doing what they can. This is a third world country here. One of the doctors actually was a very lovely woman. She had 3 master's degrees. She was very vigilant at my sister's bedside every day. And she stated, you remind me of my mother. And if you were my mother, I'd send you home for the surgery. She actually said that. So my nephew and I thought, this is it. We're going to make sure the insurance, you know, knows this. The doctor throughout the time was a truly gift from God. Although her first language was Cuban, she was about the only few staff that spoke English with little difficulty, and she reassured us that whatever happened, she'd be there to go through it with us and help us with any decisions we were going to have to make.
You mentioned communication issues when we spoke.
Well, we soon discovered that not all cell phones have suppliers that work in Cuba. My nephew gave me his phone to use, and notification to my sister's insurance in Canada was next to impossible. I asked if the hospital could call the insurance because we couldn't get through on my sister's nephew's phone, which is the only phone we had there that we could actually text with even. They advised me that their government had a Cuban company that would be the messenger with insurance, and we didn't even receive any information that something was going on and happening. And remember, that 72 hours. So I managed to text my sister's daughter in Toronto, and she became the go-between with the insurance company. As I couldn't call out but just text, when I panic, I'd text my niece and I'd say, do something. You know, and I'd say, tell her to call me right now. It's been 3 hours. I want to know something. So she'd text her, or she'd phone her, and then the insurance would call me. Insurance did try calling the hospital, though, because when they called me, they said, we've been trying to get through. We can't get through. So I said, whatever you do, just call this cell number. Actually talking to you, we can talk. So many texts and calls later, the insurance contacted us and said that my sister would be shipped by air ambulance with medics, and when word of the first hospital bed in Oshawa, the GTA area, was available, we'd get out of there. And that's how she put it, we'd get out of there.
So at that point, things are resolved then? Like everything's... Well,
so I thought. Then they said, oh, you need a waiver. The insurance was emailing the hospital a waiver that my sister needed to sign. Well, to my horror, when I spoke to the nurses and I'm pointing at it on the computer, that we needed that printed, she said the government This is a government hospital, and they don't allow us to send emails or faxes outside of Canada, like just in Cuba. So they couldn't send anything out of country. And that waiver needed to go. Now, my nephew's a computer tech for Rogers, and he was able to somehow wrangle with the resort, who didn't really want to do it, but he got the piece of paper, got it signed, he took a picture and sent it off to the insurance. So 24 hours, this was a blessing for us that he was able to, I couldn't have done it with just my sister. It was a blessing that he was able to get that ball rolling that we could actually get to Canada. 24 hours had gone by now. We were well into the second day, and there were still no beds in Ontario. They just said, sorry, we just don't have a bed. So they decided to go to a plan B, which was an available bed in Fort Lauderdale, USA, a short distance away.
So now they're resolved.
We thought so. I was in a panic, and I said, just get us out of Cuba. I don't care where you're sending us. Just get us out of there. If you have to go to the States, that's fine with me. Our insurance is going to cover it as long as, you know. So God made me realize how blessed I am with this country. I thought, I did not feel safe at all. And I thought, you know, you didn't have to go through all that baloney. You know, when you're here, you want to go to the hospital, you wait for a bed, sure, but you don't have, you can phone, you can fax. There's so much that you couldn't do there. And I didn't get any food. I don't know what they were thinking. The resort actually brought me bread that I ate for 2 days and water. And I just wore the clothes on my back. I didn't get to go back and forth and wear anything I brought. So I discovered a lot of things that were important to me at one time were not anymore. I discovered there was no cafeteria in the hospital, and I'd only be allowed to leave Cuba with a knapsack. That was it. I was leaving my suitcase behind. By mid-afternoon that day, I asked if there was somewhere I could get food. I hadn't eaten breakfast, and I was diabetic. And I'm thinking, okay, I don't have my medication. I need something. So I told her that I needed food. She did test my sugars. And then she gave me some local ladies, and she said, you go with her, who didn't speak any English at all. So I thought, okay, she's going to take me to the cafeteria. Well, 4 blocks later outside the hospital, I had a booth, a little stand on the corner. I was trying to figure out, what can I have here? I saw a yogurt, and then I looked for money, and I said, okay, I saw that dollar, peso. And I give it to her, and then I think, please bring me back to my sister. I don't know how to get back. Anyway, the Lord blessed me and this lady did take me back to my sister in the hospital, but I would never have been able to do it myself. So she was good, but she just didn't understand what I was trying to say or anything. So late Saturday, I had to leave my sister for a few hours to get a knapsack because I was told that's all I could bring. So I went to the resort, picked it up, and then I trusted that my nephew was going to be able to get my luggage back home. And then I thought, okay, all I've got is this my purse with just a few things in it, my knapsack, and some bread in that fridge and water there. So I'm going to be okay. A little bit of cheese in there, too, so that's fine. So far.
It was during that time that you told me that God really spoke to you. What happened?
Well, my sister has a different background than I do in her faith. And so often when I would talk to her, I had to watch how I spoke to her. So I'd say, God spoke to me in such a wonderful way. I read the Daily Bread, and can I read it to you? And she'd always say, sure. So I read it. So I got to, with her cancer treatments, I would go with her to get her results last year. So every so many weeks we'd go, and I'd bring everything with me. And I'd say, I saw this, and then I'd read a part in the Bible, and I'd read the Daily Bread to her, and she'd always say, sure. You know, she'd never say, oh, I hear it. You know, because that happens to me sometimes. So anyway, she was very good, and she listened. So anyway, when it came to this point of the trip, I said to her, I need to read to you. But the reason why I'll read the Daily Bread was important. The reason is the insurance case manager had telephoned myself. I was using advisors that they had an air ambulance available coming from Montreal. 2 Canadian medics were coming to pick us up. We weren't going to be going to Canada, but the doctor who said that was so good to me and my sister gave us the impression, you know, don't really tell them that you're going to the States. You're going home. That's what she more or less gave me the impression of. And we were on day two of that 72-hour window for surgery. So reading the daily breaths to my sister was becoming a very ongoing thing, and comparing the scripture. I'd read the scripture after. It was a comfort to both of us. She felt comforted in her situation, and I certainly did. God was teaching me to trust Him, that He is faithful. January 13th, there was the scripture was Psalm 126. But if you were to read Daily Bread, it says, when we have lived through a difficult circumstance and discovered that God was faithful, keeping that in mind helps greatly the next time life's waters turn rough. We may not know how God will get us through our circumstances, but His kindness to us in the past helps us to trust that He will. And that was something that really I said to her, is He ever speaking to us, isn't He? And she said, yes. So when that comment went, I'd read more to her. Then what happened was, 3 a.m., I got a call on Monday that the case manager saying there was a bed in Fort Lauderdale was coming to get us the next day. And just tell them that you're going home. Don't tell them where you're going. Just tell them you're going home. That was the case manager telling us this. And then she added, no matter what we're going to get you out of there today, and don't worry. Everybody kept saying, we're going to get you out of there. And I'm thinking, how fast this is. But they kept saying that. So then what happened? Well, 1:30, and that was 3 o'clock in the morning. 11:30, we were in the morning. We were told it was too windy for the plane to land. There was tornado warnings, and they weren't going to let any planes land in Kaikoko. The Cuban doctors were prepping her for surgery. There was 5 of them. They were very good doctors. They assured me they would do a good job. The operating room was ready, and that evening would be the 72-hour mark, so they wouldn't even allow her to fly out. They'd say, no, she's too dangerous to fly out. And they said they're going to, and I said, well, you know what? We're still going to wait. If it's 5-hour delay, I don't care. We're waiting. I told my sister once again, we've got to pray. This is getting to the crunch. We really have to pray. So the verse I read to you, the first verse, when we first I sat down, that's the verse I read her about having faith and being still in Daily Bread, January 14th. And the reason I picked that day wasn't the day of that it was. It was called Growing in the Wind. And I thought, what better one to read? It's windy out. So I read it to her. And sure enough, it says, Jesus let His disciples experience gale force winds to strengthen their faith. So I felt He's trying to strengthen my faith. And then it also says, but how strong would our faith be if we couldn't discover for ourselves His reassuring be still when the winds of circumstances howl? And my sister looked at me and she said, you know what? God has a plan. And for her to say that, that was pretty good. Yeah. Anyway, it was that verse, Mark 4:36-41 on last Sunday, and I got home Saturday, remember? That spoke to both of us, calmed our storm, and both of us had experienced God's presence and felt His peace. We didn't worry. It's out of our hands. We couldn't do anything. She was going to have the surgery, or we were getting out of there. So 1:30 p.m., the medics came. We got word they landed anyway. They were determined to land even in the bad weather. And they arrived at the airport, and we got in that 72-hour window. They okayed us to fly. The doctors and the medics checked it all out, and we were escorted to the air ambulance. Once again, I was hearing these reassuring words. Don't worry, we'll get you out of here. Everything's going to be okay. And the pilot said something to the Cuban people on the tarmac about having to reroute, and off we went. And I'm thinking, reroute? Where are we going? And I still don't know if it was because they couldn't tell when we were going to the States or if he was just joking around, but I just kept my mouth shut. So anyway, the day after we arrived in Fort Lauderdale, my sister had a successful surgery. A bed became available for our return to Canada Saturday, January 30th. We flew by air ambulance with medics to Port Perry, Ontario. And the next day, there I was looking at that verse here at church. So it's really important, these daily breads. I started reading them when I was working at Bob and Rita's Hoagie House, and I hadn't met the Lord then, but they were hanging around, and I'd read them. And they did touch my day. I think, gee, that's what I'm thinking about today. You know, and God's walking me through it. And I thought, you know, for someone who hasn't a relationship with the Lord, it's still okay. They still are willing to read them and listen. So I carry them in my purse all the time, and I've got people coming to me because I can get them at the back of the church. I've got 3 people that are waiting for them as soon as they're in. You know, did you bring me some? Do you have some at home? So I never thought, I'm a controller, and I never thought I was a good witness. But after all the experience I went through, I just feel the Lord does work in my life. He is faithful, and it's a confirmation that He's truly in the center of my life.
Thank you so much.
So great how things come together in ways beyond what we could ever plan. From a doctor who actually does speak English and is speaking reassuring words, even if those reassuring words are, you should go home. To a pilot who's willing to land in bad weather, to a book that was put together and published months before having exactly what God wanted you to hear in that moment. So great.